time is here. We'll pick you up and dust you off when you're done with Everclear. We're the ones, have some fun, Recovery 101. Recovery 101. The show you gotta hear. We'll bring you back from smoking crack when the Reaper's drawing near. We're the ones, when you're done, Recovery 101.
Thank you to Teddy for our marvelous Recovery 101 jingle. Recovery 101 does not speak for AA, NAOACAGAPASLASLAACRRMMDRAHASMARTFA, or FNA. Why are you looking at me strange?
Nothing.
Welcome to Recovery 101. My name is Bruce B. As always with
Shelley.
Awesome. So why are you looking at me like that? You're giving me the weird look.
Nothing.
Are you looking at my Borg accessory?
I'm looking at your awesome handsomeness.
Are you looking at this right here?
No.
I don't think you're looking at my awesome handsomeness.
I am.
Anyway, welcome to Recovery 101. My name is Bruce B. As always with...
You already said that.
Did I?
Yes.
Oh, shit. You know what? I gotta just have regular coffee instead of Mexican coffee, apparently. So how's your week been?
When did we have Mexican coffee?
You don't have tequila in your coffee?
No.
You don't even have coffee?
No.
Oh. Well, I don't know what you put in my coffee, but it made me forget I already did the disclaimer, the Welcome to Recovery 101, so there you go.
So what is it you just asked me?
How's your week?
Oh. We're doing really well so far.
You got a new church.
We went and tried out a new church.
That had a guy that looked like he could have been the sheriff.
Yes. Pastor Butch.
Pastor Butch in Tombstone.
Yes.
First Congressional Church of Tombstone.
Not congressional, congregational.
First Congregational Church of Tombstone.
Yeah, I like that church a lot. I got the happy church face.
Yes, you did.
Which I did not have after we tried the Methodist in Sierra Vista, which I'm going to have a really hard time not being Methodist. It drives me crazy. Because that's what I am.
Half the people in there are Methodists.
I know.
Including Pastor Butch.
Yeah, I know. They were all Methodists, and then the Methodist church there closed, so. Yeah, I know, but still.
Well, they probably had a Methodist church like the one here in Huachuca.
Where there were seven people, and they finally shut it down. But there, it
didn't look like it was shut down. It didn't say anything about it being shut down.
What?
The church right over here.
Oh, the Methodist church in Huachuca. Yeah, it's not shut down. But they do.
Five or six people.
Seven. It has a congregation of seven. I forget who I talked to some woman. The pastor that runs the small Huachuca church is actually the pastor at two other churches.
Well, they got a tie of like MFers to make that church survive.
They must. They got some deep pockets.
I'm giving 78% of my entire paycheck to the church. But that just shut you right up, didn't it?
No, I ran out of things to say on that subject.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I like that church, and I think that I will try it a few more times and see how it goes.
All right. So let's see what else is going on here. That's about it. Got a new church.
I know, not much else has happened.
Hell
this week.
Yeah!
We worked. We ate dinner. We did our laundry.
It's been windy as F.
We started watching Torchwood.
Torchwood, you know what I discovered? Now, people, if you don't know what Torchwood is, it's on Amazon Prime.
It was originally like a WB sci-fi show.
Okay, well, let me tell you what my impression of that is. It is 100% a ripoff of two shows put together. One of them would be Grimm. You have the cop who now finds out something she didn't know existed, and now she's going to be part of it. And the other part is librarians, because she is the outside cop military who comes in to the thing where they have artifacts that nobody else has and they need to protect them from the rest of the world.
And the only problem with that premise is that Torchwood came out before either one of those shows.
Okay, then they're both ripoffs of It. They're ripoffs of It.
Apparently.
So anyway, it looks okay. We'll let you guys know later. You know what that means, though.
What does that mean?
Oh, it's time for the boozy news and the news not fit for booze. Dudes are fast now.
I slowed down my dudes for you.
I'm telling you.
My dudes would be way faster than that if it was just me.
Yeah, but yours would sound more like a ticker tape.
We sound more like the teletype, which is what we're trying to do.
No, ticker tape on, you know, 1928.
That's not a ticker tape. A ticker tape. Are you talking about the teletype machine?
No, I'm talking about the thing that gave out ticker tape from the stock market.
Oh, that thing. Okay, never mind. I thought you were talking about like a parade or something. I'm like,
oh. Okay. So we have shout outs to Yvette, Wendy, Lori Faith, Stephen, Hamid, Damon, Gary, Monty, Dadoff, Fran, Bill, Roger, Dave, Randy, James, Jay Duff, Alexandra, Stryker, Dan, Susan, Mitch, Joey, John, Carol, Natalie, Georgette, Jack, Curtis, Lee, Jane Lynn. And we hope our friend Yvette is doing well. Everybody pray for her. I think she's in the hospital. So, Wendy sent in our first one.
Wendy M?
Wendy M, yes. Chris Meng Lee. This is classic. So I got to skip down here to the beginning. So there's these two cops that are, I don't know, sitting eating donuts or whatever. And it's 1:45 a.m. This guy pulls up his BMW, parks in the red zone directly in front of a hot fire hydrant, and comes over to the police car to ask directions. They thought his behavior was suspicious, and they asked for consent to search his vehicle. They found, by the way, he later admitted to them he traded 6 pounds of marijuana for the vehicle, so you know where this is going.
Yeah.
So they found a loaded semi-automatic handgun in the driver's door pocket and approximately 1.5 pounds of weed in the trunk. They asked him if he sold weed, and he said, "Well, I dabble a little bit."
So, really?
Now, this is in Shasta County. This is up by where my aunt lives. So he consulted to, search the vehicle and search his cell phone. Many text messages showing that he was actually on his way to deliver weed to someone. But he got
like more
lost.
Than a dabble.
So he got lost. So he stopped to ask the cops direction.
Why didn't he GPS it on his phone?
I would wonder that myself.
What
and then
dip.
I got to go back to the earlier part of the story where it said, it should be noted that all our officers are always willing to assist you if you're lost. As long as you're not a felon with a loaded gun and weed in your car. So he is going away for a while, and I can't remember exactly.
Park in front of a fire hydrant. That'll get you.
Well, he started with $10,000 bail, and then they raised it to $100,000. He pleaded not guilty to the criminal charges. I don't know how he thinks he's going to get away with that, but so that's what he said. Then we've got the boozy news sponsored mostly by Bill P. today. Shelly has no comment.
No.
Sometimes comments are good. When I go to take a drink of coffee, that means I will not be speaking. And Shelly is walking away. She just walked away from the show. So hopefully she can hear this, because a bar in, where is it, in London, the McGrorty Bar. That's a really...
McGrorty.
Set a Guinness World Record.
For what?
It sold a $14,168 shot of cognac.
What the heck? Why did it cost so much?
And that was really, that was on the 23rd of March. Guinness World Records confirmed it. Ranjita Dutt. Oh, what?
What?
Ranjita Dutt McGrorty.
What?
Founder and director of Trinity Natural Gas ordered a 1.4-ounce serving of Rome de Bellegarde from a bottle that was discovered in Cognac House Jean Filou's cellar in 2004. Is believed to have been from the very first blend created by the distiller in 1894.
Well, I guess that's why it costs so much.
So it's not McGrorty's bar. It's a place, a London bar. Hyde Kensington is the name of it. Now, the amazing thing is Ranjita is obviously an Indian name, but her last name's McGrorty.
Well, apparently she's an immigrant who married a native.
And probably married well, or either that or she does well. Because
Well, you think?
Because that's the most expensive cognac, a shot of cognac ever sold anywhere at any time. So, yeah.
Something we could never afford, even though I was a connoisseur.
So there was a customs officials at New York Airport said an airline crew member on a flight from Jamaica. What do you think that this guy might have had?
Jamaica, man, I would guess the ganja.
It's not the ganja.
Really?
He had 9 pounds of cocaine inside his pants.
Wait, coming from Jamaica?
Coming from Jamaica.
Ew.
And it was a Jamaican city in Hugh Hall. But he was a member on a Fly Jamaica Airlines flight, Fly Jamaica Airlines flight that arrived at John F. Kennedy International Airport from Montego Bay. He presented himself for inspection, as one would do. And they found 4 packages of cocaine taped to his legs. And you know what the first thing I thought of is? He's got cocaine taped to his leg inside his pants. I'm thinking, you know how that came up, right? One of the TSA custom people chicks looked at him and said, size does matter. Because that's a whopping lot of cocaine to tape to your ankle or to your leg. And it was taped.
Oh, he's in customs. Okay.
And it was taped like to his thigh. So, you know. Actually, all over. Bill said, why is it always in the pants?
It's always in the pants. Or they take off the pants and it's in the butt.
Yeah. He was arrested on suspicion of importing a controlled substance. I always find that. I don't know how they can do that.
What?
Suspicion.
Because you are innocent until proven guilty.
It's taped to him.
Well, he has not had a trial yet. So he's innocent until proven guilty.
No, he was arrested. Suspicion of. He should have been arrested on bringing in controlled substance. It was taped to his person. It's not like there's any doubt about that. It's taped to him.
Well, we're not doubting it, but he's still innocent until proven guilty. They have to actually do that in a court of law. I think he should be, you know, proven guilty of being a complete and total git, because who the heck tapes 9 pounds of coke to their legs?
And someone who wants to make a lot of money. They said it was worth $160,000. So I think that's probably at the kilo price. I don't even know. Yeah, I'm so far out of it, I don't know.
You don't even know.
And I don't even know. I can make your hands clap. So this also from Bill. This came off a viral video of a crayfish enjoying spring break.
What?
Enjoying spring. Yes. The crayfish is holding on to this can of Keystone beer, so he's got no taste whatsoever. And he has a cigarette in his claw that he is continually pulling up to his face like he's smoking it.
This and is a crayfish.
It's a crayfish.
Like the small crustaceans.
Yes. And they say the events that led to this crustacean's unusual display were unclear. But in the video, people are laughing hysterically every time it pulls the cigarette up to its mouth.
Okay, we got to find this video.
And the reason why I like this story is because it's about spring break, and we have a topic today that's going to kind of go around that as well. Okay, so this is, Bill sent this to me, and the subject line of the email was nasty. So you're familiar with when there's people that drink mezcal in Mexico, and what is in the bottle, bottom of the bottle sometimes?
A worm.
A worm, that's right. And you can supposedly hallucinate from the worm, but I've had the worm before, and I didn't feel any different as I did before, which was just really, 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 really drunk. So they were at this place where these wide-mouth bottles were filled with artisanal wild agave mezcal, and there was all kinds of stuff in these. This is down in Oaxaca. There was bottles with species such as a blood snake, a ridgehead snake, yellow belly snake, and whip snake.
Why?
Well, they don't really know why, but, you know, forever college kids have always, like on spring break and stuff, gone to drink these things with the worm in the bottle. And it said, the sale of wildlife, even pickled, is strictly regulated in Mexico. So the funny thing is, it's strictly regulated, which leads me to believe it's not necessarily illegal.
Right.
You're just not following the regulations. Okay, this one, this will be a quick one. This is from Bill. Alabama sheriff legally used $750,000 of inmate food funds to buy a house.
That sounds legit.
It's
a perk.
Well, here's the thing. It is legit. There is a law that was passed before World War II that allowed sheriffs to keep excess inmate feeding funds for themselves. And this guy said, you know, you got $250,000 a year for each of the last 3 years. And so he only makes like $93,000, and of course he bought a $750,000 house with an in-ground pool and canal access.
Well, all right then. Well, $750,000 in that area is going to get you a heck of a house.
Well, and actually they own several properties totaling more than $1.7 million. And he said in a statement to National Public Radio, mm-hmm, that the liberal media has begun attacking me for following the letter of the law. Now, while I'm not always supportive of the giant liberal media at large, see, the problem for me on this is what he did is 100% legal, but it probably shouldn't be. I mean, yeah, because, you know, what he's saying is that the inmates are getting properly fed. Now, the inmates are saying, no, we're not, but he's saying, yes, they were. So I think the case is going to be, you know, whether they were being fed. You know, they said they got paper-thin bologna and cold grits. You know, I know at L.A. County Jail, you get two pieces of bread with a slice of bologna on it, and that's like that's like lunch. You know, I mean, that's food. So, I don't ever remember anyone getting grits in jail, but, you know, who knows? Okay, this is kind of cool. So some guy in the U.K., Justin Whiting, he bought a tintype for £7, which is $10.
All right.
And it's just a picture of a guy.
Yeah.
And doesn't know who the guy is, bought it for $10.
Tintype, those old, like, sepia photos?
Yes, they call it, it was kind of a sort of 19th century Polaroid because it would apply chemicals to a metal sheet, and then as the chemicals would eat it, the picture would, like, develop right in front of your eyes. So he said he noticed the picture was for sale. It was a bit blurry on the site, but when I got it, it was a lot clearer. And he goes, I thought to myself, gee whiz, this could be a real photo. I've been obsessed with American outlaws for years, and I read a lot of books. And he goes, he thought it was Jesse James. So he contacted forensic experts in the U.S. who looked at the tintype, and the guy, Will Dunaway, is a guy that is 19th century photography expert. And he recognized it right off as being Jesse James, taken when he was about 14. And the reason he knew it is because he was looking at other photographs of Jesse James that were very probably taken during the same photo session. Now they're saying it might be worth $2 million.
Oh, holy crap. Sell that puppy.
Yeah. So pretty good. Not too shabby. It said, the guy said it was very similar to images he found on the Jesse James Foundation site, I presume all taken at the same time. So that's good on you, whatever your name was, Justin Whiting. You know, buy something for $10, it's worth possibly $2 million.
Why can't that ever happen to us? We've been to Goodwill. How come nothing we get at the Goodwill is ever worth $2 million?
Nothing's ever been worth $2 million. I have found stuff at not so much Goodwill. And you know what? I don't know about in other areas of the country, but Salvation Army at their stores, that's the worst place to try and find something. You know why? Because they have people at Salvation Army that are very good at looking at stuff. They actually, in the L.A. area, there is actually a Salvation Army store that carries nothing but collectibles antiques that they get out of all their stuff. So you're not very likely to find something in there. Now, this goes to something that you have talked about to me many times. The whole thing about creating superbugs by not finishing
your antibiotics,
right? So, yay science. This is also from Bill. These have all been from Bill except for the one from Wendy. Platypus milk.
Might be the antidote
humanity needs to deal with antibiotic-resistant germs, because apparently in Australia, they had a breakthrough. They found that the platypus has a really unique biochemistry, which, you know, go figure. This is one of the strangest creatures on the planet.
Have a unique biochemistry.
So, you know, so what they found out, it has a special in the milk. And the platypus are such weird animals, it would make sense for them to have weird biochemistry. That is a quote from Dr. Janet Newman, which, amazingly enough, goes really close to what I just said. I'm in the wrong position. I could be a neuroscientist, apparently, Dr. Janet Newman. The platypus belongs to the monotreme family, a small group of animals that lay eggs and produce milk to feed their young. By taking a closer look at the milk, we've characterized a new protein that has very unique antibacterial properties with the potential to save lives.
Well, that's fascinating. So when are we going to start getting platypus milk at the grocery store? I didn't know platypuses created milk.
I think what they're going to do is probably extract the chemicals and figure out what the chemicals are that make them so antibiotic immune or so germ immune, and they are going to use that to save lives. And that, my friends, is the end of the boozy news and the news not fit for booze. Man, you were slow.
Hey, I'm Dr. Drew, and you are listening to Recovery 101.
And we are back. Yes, Recovery 101 Radio, terminally unique in Tombstone. Yay!
It's sort of like our Laguna Beach studio gaffe, because we're not actually in Tombstone.
We're close, though. I mean, we're in southern Arizona. We were in Tombstone today.
I know.
We're right there. Actually, the town we're living in is actually smaller than Tombstone, and Tombstone's only like 1,800 people. So go figure. So we mentioned earlier that there was a thing about spring break. Shelly, you want to premise this a little? The name of this show is Right Message, Wrong Time.
Yeah. We're at our home group meeting, and there was a gentleman there that was talking about that he had taken a couple of guys down with him to...
He went down with a woman.
Oh, he went down... Oh, that's right. He went down with a woman.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Not a romantic thing, but just with the woman in the program.
Because they were going to carry the message of recovery in Mexico during spring break.
At Puerto Peñasco.
In a party town. And he seemed disappointed that no one wanted to hear his message.
No one wanted to get 12-stepped while they were partying at spring break?
Yeah, except for the one guy that was passed out in the middle of the road who happened to be a local. And he was just the local drunk.
And he picked him up off the ground.
Yes, and took him home.
Well, no.
He walked him home, though.
He didn't walk him home. He said, you have to walk, and you have to stay to the right of this white line, or I'm going to kick your ass.
That's right.
And but, you know, I was thinking about that, and I was hearkening back to spring break. And my spring breaks were kind of not that wild and exciting, actually, even though I was a complete...
Yeah.
Lodi.
I never had the classic spring break experience. I never went anywhere. I went home or I stayed at school and studied.
Yeah, I don't know how these kids like get enough money to go to Daytona Beach or, I don't get it. Or they end up in Cozumel or something. I mean, but when I was partying, last on my list of shit I want to listen to is someone telling me how I'm doing it wrong. Because when I'm young and I'm at spring break, I'm probably doing it right. Because, look, far be it from me to give accolades to those that are partying. But
why not? If you can, party.
But spring break is like, it's like the ultimate party experience in college. And it's like, that is...
And there's this old fart with this chick standing by the side of the road. Repent.
I can imagine this guy holding up a sign that says, the end is near. And people just looking at him going, yeah.
Do you have a problem with alcohol? You can't get sober. And everybody's going, no, I don't have a problem with it. I'm liking it just fine.
Well, because I could be wrong. Now, I would suspect that from where we are, that Tucson, Arizona, I would think that a lot of the people in Puerto Peñasco would be from University of Arizona, which is right in Tucson. Now, I could be wrong about this, but it seems like you could go to the school and say, hey, I'm a sober member of 12-step fellowships without getting specific with them,
right.
And say, you know, I would love to talk to students that you, because trust me, the school knows a percentage of who the alcoholics are. These are the people that have gotten trouble on campus and all this, and say, I'd like to talk to these guys. You guys want to set that up? Now, these are people that are already suffering consequences. But to go to the place where, I mean, can you imagine this? And I'll do it for you from the female perspective. Okay, so you are at a beach where there are guys with abs, good-looking guys with abs all around you. The drink is flowing. People are dancing, and, you know, people are getting naked. It is party central. And a guy comes up and goes, let me talk to you about alcoholism.
Yeah, no, I probably would say, I don't think I need to know about alcoholism. I think I'm well on my way.
It's like from the guy perspective. You know, here you are. You're at Puerto Peñasco. There are girls in thong bikinis everywhere. They're having the, you know, best boobs contest on the stage. And, you know, and alcohol is flowing everywhere. And it's in multicolored containers with, you know, fabulous things. And people are drinking. Some guy comes up and goes, can I get your attention away from all the boobs up on stage right now? And can you put down that drink for a minute? I'd like to talk to you about how alcohol is going to ruin your life. And the guy's like, dude, right now you are fucking ruining my life. And it's like, dude, it's like, and I'm, because when Shelly and I were thinking about it, I'm like, this is one of, you know, like I said, I didn't really experience it this way, but I know a lot of people that did. And it's like, this is one of those experiences that people, well, they may not remember, because I might have been too drunk, but that people like talk about for years, like, oh man, it was fantastic. How would you like for someone to just fuck up your experience? You know, because if it ever comes time to get sober, they're going to be like, fuck that AA shit. That guy wrecked my spring break. I will never get an opportunity to do that again until next year. And the funny thing is, I don't know about most places, but I started college when I was 17.
Uh-huh.
17, 18, 19. I graduated college when I wasn't even legal to drink yet.
Yeah. I went to college when I was like, when I started college, I was almost about ready to turn 19. So I became 21 as a junior.
I don't know, is the drinking age in Mexico less?
Yeah, I think it's... It might even be 16 down there. I don't know. Or it might be 18. In Europe, I know it's 16. In some parts of Europe, it's 16 and 17. Because there, you know, if you're in it, owning your own vehicle in many places in Europe is not real high on people's agendas. A lot of people take public transportation, right?
Right.
So to have a lower drinking age doesn't increase the drunk driving rate.
Right.
And they have a culture of learning to it's 18 in Mexico. About learning, they have a culture in Europe and other places about learning how to drink responsibly. And I think that you just turned off, you put the lid down and turned off the recording. Is it still recording?
Of course it is.
What do you mean, of course it is?
We're high tech. High tech in Tombstone. We have two. Look, you guys don't even know. We have a multi-channel mixing board right to the left. We have two monitors directly in front of us that we can look up things while we're talking. We can do everything. It's fantastic. You guys don't even, and you don't even know.
Yeah, right, okay.
So, and as part of this discussion, now that I'm thinking about it, what do you think of the drinking age of 21? I'm just wondering.
I don't know.
You know what? Maybe we should dumpster fire that one.
What, the legal drinking age?
Yeah. Yeah, hold off on that. Okay. So, back to the so back to the spreading the word to those that don't give a F.
Yeah, well, what surprised me, sorry, I'm yawning, that which always happens the minute we start recording. What surprised me was the fact that he was surprised that nobody wanted to listen to him.
That kind of struck me a little bit as well, because
what was he expecting to have happen? They were going to fall at his feet and say, oh, yes, please save me. I mean, what? And it wasn't like this was a group trip or anything. He just went.
I wonder if he wore like a white robe and sandals.
But I mean, he
walked along the beach with his arms outstretched saying, come to me, alcoholics.
He just went down there by himself with this chick and just did this. And I'm like, so it wasn't like it was a sponsored. Basically, people looked at him as if he was some kind of crackpot.
And don't get me wrong. You know, I think the idea of trying to give the message to people is fantastic. I just think it's right message, wrong time.
I don't think that was in any way going to end well.
Yeah. Now, have you ever, back in the day when you were partying, did you ever get approached by anybody?
No.
Like, especially in that kind of setting?
No.
That's like, it strikes me of like me today, because I was a member of Sigma Chi fraternity. That's like me going to Sigma Chi fraternity when they're having a green goddammit party and going in there and start talking to people about recovery. Now, could I go to Sigma Chi and talk to people about recovery? Probably. Would I do it in the middle of a big party atmosphere? No. You know why? You know it'd be an excellent time to talk to people about recovery? The morning after a big party.
When they're all dying from their hangovers.
You know, that might, and who knows? You know what? We don't even know. It might have been like the morning after. But my experience of hearing stories of spring breaker, it's like 24/7.
Yeah, it's like Vegas.
People are partying all the time. You might not even get a hangover there because you might not be sober long enough to get a hangover.
You wouldn't have one until the end of the week, until you go home. I think that also when you're talking about the right message, wrong time, there are a lot of ways to spread the message. It doesn't necessarily have to be, I'm going to go and pull this person away from the bar. And sometimes it is, though. Like, maybe a good place to carry the message would be at
the jail.
9 o'clock in the morning.
At the local jail.
No, 9 o'clock in the morning at the local bar when the only people that are there drinking are the actual alcoholics who might be willing to be pulled off their bar stools.
Yeah, I think that's still bad.
Hospitals.
The jail. The local jail. Like all the guys that got arrested last night for tomfoolery.
Yes, that's true.
You know, maybe. And like I said, I'm a big fan of the carry the message, and for 100% for sure, this guy's heart
was in
the right place. I'm just like, and you know, for me, like when you talk about, you know, catch people with a hangover, do you know that in my entire drinking career, I had two hangovers, only two. I mean, and I used to get slammed, and I only had hangovers twice.
Yeah, I don't remember having a lot of hangovers.
In years and years and years. And who knows? I mean, maybe that's the sign of the true alcoholic. I don't know, but
maybe it is, because I've talked to other people, some other people that are have what I consider hardcore alkies, they laugh at hangovers.
Really? Hangover. Yeah, you can fix that instantly with a drink. You know, the hair of the dog that bit you. Who would suffer from a hangover? Just start drinking again. It'll go away directly. Like right now, you won't even have to worry about it. You just won't be, you won't have a hangover once you start getting stoned again. Wow.
What?
If I don't talk, Shelly just like turns into a clam.
I had just taken a drink of my coffee right when you went to take a drink of your coffee. Oh. I had just taken one, and then you took one, and now there's a dead
now there's
air.
A, now there's a dead air point in the show. So what would, and we talked about it a little bit. So let's say you had the wild hair that you are. The funny thing for me is, you know, I worked on a CA helpline. People call there because they have a problem and they want to hear about what to do about it.
Right.
I am not necessarily one for going out and just talking to people who haven't asked me to come and talk to them. Have I talked to people about alcoholism? Yeah. I've gone and spoke many times. Those are people that are saying, hey, come and share your experience, strength, and hope with us. Come and do a panel at our recovery facility. I don't know. I've had people come up and talk to me in front of my store in the past where I would be sitting there, and they come up and they're loaded, and I realize they're loaded, and I kind of slip some, you know, programmy stuff in.
Right.
But because they're not specifically asking me about how do I get sober, I don't normally talk about it that much.
I have to wonder also when, if you're talking about, I mean, and I know this guy just went off and did this by himself, but is that a violation of attraction rather than promotion? Because he went there specifically to try to get people to come into the program, into a 12-step program. And part of what we're supposed to be doing is living our lives in such a way that we are attracting attention from people who want to know why everything is so great. How did you do this? Why are you so serene? Why is your life? How did you turn this around? So yeah. I have to wonder if, because it's attraction rather than promotion, and he was definitely promoting. Not in a huge way, but still.
The thing is that that's kind of a weird sticky wicket, because I don't think you remember at one time I actually went on AA World Services site, and they had a bunch of PSAs that were public service announcements.
Oh, yeah. They used to have commercials.
100% commercials for AA. But they didn't call them commercials. This wasn't a promotion. It was just a public service announcement. And I'm like, that's a commercial. That was for sure a commercial. So I don't know if I'd say he was breaking anything per se, because, you know, not being there, he may not have said, like, he probably didn't use a fellowship-specific speech. Like, if he just went said, you know, even if he said, I belong to 12-step fellowships, I think that would be, I'm sharing my own experience, strength, and hope with people.
Well, that's true.
But like I said, I am not likely to go do that with people that haven't asked for it.
Right.
Because people that ask for it want to hear it, and that's kind of, it's like on the helpline. Someone calls up and says, my boyfriend drinks too much. Great, you should have him call. Well, I don't think he wants to get sober. Well, you know what you need to do? Then you need to go to Al-Anon, or you need to go to Narcanon or Co-Anon or whatever Anon you want to go to. Because unless they call, it's probably not going to do anything good for them. You know, you telling them they need to get sober, how well has that worked so far?
Yeah, and it says in one of the 12-step books that we don't want to waste our time with those who do not want to hear the message. Because it may deprive another alcoholic of his chance to get sober.
I'll tell you what, though. You got to go down to Puerto Peñasco.
And look at chicks in thong bathing suits.
During spring break. Because you know what? I'm thinking that might not be a bad idea next spring break. I'd like to go to Puerto Peñasco for spring break.
Sweetie, you can't share your message. You'll end up in jail. you're Captain Inappropriate.
I'm going to share my experience, strength, and length.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, so what would your final thoughts be on right message, wrong time?
Timing is everything.
Ooh, that's actually a good one. I think I'll just go back to like one of my last statements. I only talk about recovery to people that have asked me about recovery. And that's it. So, Shelley, who's the lead out music by?
You say that really fast, like you think I don't have anybody in mind.
You usually don't.
Oh, Jam Alkers.
You know what? You got to contact him and see if you can get that other song. Because that song...
He's really good.
Yeah, and it's had a zillion like views on YouTube and stuff. I really like it. But you'll really like this song, too. Everybody.
I'm having to feed him his line.
I'm like, everybody try and leave it better than you found it and be the example.
And take care of you.
Liars and beggars and bones and thieves, come gather round for your daily reprieve. All of us here are soaked in sin. Brothers and sisters, I call you my kin. We sang with the band as we shipped out to sea. We toasted the captain while sunk to our knees. We made it to shore by the skins of our necks. We share the scars we received from the wreck. Contents and disheveled, the young heretics and the rousers of rebels. Now sing with me. Proud fight until my dying breath. Fight until my dying breath. See, I'll fight this proud fight until my dying breath.